Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, baby, it's Friday. Let's go. Let's go.
Why do we have to have this stupid camera on?
Just deal with it, John.
First of all, of everyone in this room, you guys are on camera more than anyone else.
That's right. You're on TV. You're on the TV.
My favorite show, Hancock and Kelly, hey, Sunday
mornings.
That is
not your favorite show.
8:30, yeah. Fox 2.
You don't have to do that because they're here.
I love them.
Yeah, that's not what you said. What you said is it's your favorite show.
Highly rated program.
It is my favorite show.
I very much enjoy it. It is not my favorite show. There are so many
love
good
on the spectrum.
Love on the spectrum. Oh my God, that show is way better than yours. Have you watched it?
I have not.
Politics on the spectrum.
Oh, come on. It's adorable. Love on the spectrum is adorable. It really is.
Well, you love those people.
All right, but I love you guys.
Never heard of it.
Wait.
Oh, I'll show it to you, John.
Is that your piano scarf real quick? No, this is my snooker scarf.
Snooker scarf.
Where's the cue ball going?
That's right. Has it been washed?
It has not been washed.
Disgusting. Because you never wash your scarves. It's gross.
What's wrong with that?
It's gross.
It's on my neck. There's nothing happening to this scarf.
I think you would be grossed out if it were a white or beige scarf.
Yeah,
and you could see the neck oil build up.
Neck oil. Yep. I don't have neck oil.
Everybody has neck oil.
I do not have neck
oil. Everybody has neck oil.
There's no neck oil going on over here.
Yes, if you ever dry.
I've got the driest neck in town.
There's not a millimeter of an ounce, if that's even a thing,
of neck oil on this neck.
I don't think that's the proper unit of measurement.
He measures his liquids in distance.
Well, don't we all? That's a thing. If you've had the engineering background,
and he's using the metric system.
Yes, it's a metric kind of unit of neck oil.
Well, it is the Chris and Amy show with John Hancock and Michael Kelly. They're going to be with us.
Michael's here too.
He is here. Michael's here, and he's doing great.
Yeah, there is a guy with some neck oil. Now, wait a minute. I was staying out of this because I was just thinking if you were ever to go missing, like, you know, like Gone Girl, you know, we're looking for you.
Yeah.
Or the feds are after
they'd
you.
They'd have a silver alert.
Listen, you need to get his scarf and have the bloodhounds smell that because.
That's a great idea.
It's got 30 years of smell there on it.
I've only had this scarf less than a year.
It'll be you.
I bought this scarf in Sheffield, England.
And you're not embarrassed to be wearing a snooker scarf, are you?
No, I love this scarf.
Where is the cue ball going?
Where's the cue ball going?
Yeah.
That's the patented phrase of John Virgo, the Al Michaels of snooker.
The Al Michaels of snooker.
Do you believe in miracles?
Yes.
Who's the Joe Buck of snooker?
Well, John Virgo.
He's all of them?
All of them wrapped up in one. And he's announcing the contest. We struck it well. Where's the cue ball going? Where's the cue ball going? Into the pocket, he's scratched.
Okay.
That's John Virgo.
We might be more entertaining than Love on the Spectrum because we got a little of the spectrum going on there.
What if Joe Buck announced a swing and where's the ball going? Where's the ball going?
He wouldn't steal it.
It's not a great baseball call.
No, but it's a great snooker call
because that ball's moving very slowly. And is it going to go in the pocket?
How often does he do it?
Whenever it's pertinent. I mean, you don't just say it out of nowhere.
Well, right.
But it is his patented phrase, and it's on this lovely scarf.
Does it happen once? Are they called matches?
Frames. And then, match is...
Like bowling.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
Well, it's the Chris and Amy show
with Hancock and Kelly.
They start the show with us on Fridays every Friday.
Go, boy.
Please reach out to us, 314-436-7900. That number is not for your complaints. You can also leave us a voice message straight from the Odyssey app where you should be listening to the show live.
Time now for the top of the order. The top three stories everybody will be talking about.
Hey, you're not going to believe this, but the temperatures are going to get well above freezing, and that means the ice is going to go away.
Yay.
Starting tomorrow, actually today we'll get above the freezing mark, but then we're in the mid-40s and over 50 at one point next week. Let's go.
And it might have started already, but the teen accused of hitting six people in the Ted Drews parking lot in December, just a few days before Christmas, he is appearing in court today.
And Vegas beat the Blues last night, 4-2. St. Louis, that's us, will be hosting Dallas tomorrow. Also, SLU basketball tomorrow afternoon, and you can hear that right here on KMOX. They get started at 1 o'clock, which means a pregame show's at 12:45. So, John Hancock, Michael Kelly, it's been an eventful first week, huh?
Yeah, I guess. Seems like a lot of stuff happened.
It does seem like a lot of stuff is happening. So you're watching the second Trump administration from a distance. What do you think of the first 5 days?
Well, I think it's going to be a fascinating era in American history that's going to unfold over the course of the next 4 years.
In the words of one comedian, Ryan Hamilton, he said he's looking forward to the day when you don't start every sentence with, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Dude, well, no joke.
The inauguration was a bit jarring for me, the speech in particular, the delivery. But other than that, I'm not really surprised with too much I've seen. I mean, it's been well known what he was going to do and how he was going to do it. And I think he's delivered on a lot of those promises of what he was going to do. Now, he hasn't lowered the price of bacon and eggs, and he hasn't done away with tax on tail. He didn't end the war on the first day. So there's lots of things he didn't do. But everything he has announced and put a spotlight on, I kind of anticipated it and expected it to be this. And obviously the thing we're all focusing on right now is the birthright amendment. I think this president knows full well that's unconstitutional, against the law. But this is going to be a dialogue that we're going to have for the next 12 months as it makes its way to the Supreme Court. And I think that's exactly the type of rhetoric Donald Trump wants in the atmosphere as he's going to try to execute his agenda, which could be problematic for many.
Yeah, there's going to be things that he does that I like. I like the hiring freeze at the federal government. I think that was a step in the right direction. You guys did an excellent interview the other day with Jason Kander about the refugee program and what that means for the people in Afghanistan who served this nation, who are trapped there now because the refugee program has been suspended by the president. I don't like that decision. And that's... You know, I think as a political pundit or whatever the heck we are, Kelly, I'm going to call balls and strikes. And, you know, when he does things I like, I'm going to say it. And when he does things I don't, I'm going to say it, too. And for a Republican president, he's going to do more things I don't like than probably any Republican president in my lifetime has done.
Well, John, to that point, as a conservative, I've been concerned about process. Process is important. And what I'm seeing here with the president is he's addressing issues that are concerning. I do think Biden's border policy, you know, was disastrous.
Certainly in the first 2 years.
Yes. Yeah. So he's addressing issues that are real, like immigration, but then I see the way he's doing it, and in some cases, it feels appalling if you're going into schools or churches. So do you see yourself agreeing with certain issues that need to be addressed, but then maybe disagreeing with the way he's going about it?
Well, deportation is a great example, because we don't know yet what that's really going to look like ultimately. If it looks like going after people who have broken the law, they've come to this country illegally, or they've overstayed their visa, so they're not here legally, and they've broken the law, they need to go. And I think most Americans agree with that position. And if that's what the deportation policy looks like under Donald Trump, then I'm going to be fully supportive of it.
What's interesting about deportation, if you ask the public, is generally, are you in favor of removing illegal immigrants? It is a popular position.
70%+. Yep.
But if you frame the question like, well, what if they've been here 10 years? And they have family already, like they have a son or daughter, and they've been contributing by working.
Right.
Do you want to spend the money to deport them? It becomes hugely unpopular.
Well, that's right. And I think how that
it's how you ask the question to people.
And it's how you implement the policy. So, you know, and not to mention the economic dislocation there will be if you do deport hundreds of thousands or millions of people who are working in this country right now when we can't fill jobs that we have.
Right. And the cost of removing them.
Which we're not yet. You know, you couldn't have a mass deportation policy implemented today because the infrastructure to do that doesn't exist. So you're going to have to fund that infrastructure first. So I'm going to wait and see on that particular policy proposal. There's a way he could do it that would be very, I think, helpful and protective of the country.
You can count on that. He's not going to do that. He's going to do exactly what you anticipate he's going to do. And I think it is going to be jarring. And I, by the way, part of me believes that maybe this is something we need to see unfold before our eyes so that people can wake up and realize this man means what he says.
That is Michael Kelly. John Hancock is with us as well. It's the Chris and Amy Show. We got another couple segments with these boys. Got some stuff that has happened in the city of St. Louis, stuff that is going on in the state that we want to talk about with them. We have experts here, so we're going to talk to the experts. Hancock and Kelly with Chris and Amy on KMOX. Friday, January 24th, and we've got Hancock and Kelly with us. It is the Chris and Amy Show. Good to have you along. We're going to talk a little football in the next hour. Mm. Scott Jagow is our resident Bills fan.
Yeah, he is.
And the Bills play the Chiefs. We've got Danon Hughes, who is the Chiefs radio analyst. We got them back-to-back. So they're going to just miss each other. There won't be a fight, but we will talk about that big game, the AFC Championship, which, by the way, we will be carrying the Westwood One coverage of that on Sunday. So if you want to listen to the AFC Championship, this is the place to go.
I'm not going to believe Scott's fandom unless you bring in, you know, like one of those tables that, that the Bills people have.
Let me tell you something about that.
Yeah.
So Scott goes to this bar called the Shamrock.
Oh, the Shamrock.
Every Sunday, for that's where all the Bills fans go.
Okay.
It is the St. Louis Bills bar. And during halftime, you know, I went to the bathroom, and I'm coming back, and they're clearing a space out. The bar is pretty crowded.
Oh, my.
And they bring this little card table.
Right.
And this child who was there.
Child?
I don't know how. It was a child. People bring their kids. I don't know. 12, 13, 14, whatever. And he gets up on a bar stool, and he jumps onto the table and breaks it, and then they put it back together, and then somebody else gets up on a bar stool, they jump on the table and break it, and somebody else gets up on the, and the process repeats. They just keep breaking
the same
table.
It sounds
like it would hurt, and how does the table not break for good?
Well, it's a breakaway table, and they put like plywood in it to keep it together, but it's a whole ritual. These Buffalo Bills
people. What's the point of it?
Well, that's the question.
There's no point.
Yeah, that's the question.
There's just no point.
I think it's really cold in Buffalo and it snows a lot.
Yeah.
So people are inside.
Jumping on tables.
You know what happens when you stay inside too much? You get cabin fever.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
I was going to say, thought maybe the birth rate goes up or
something. Yeah, that's what I thought where we were going. Well, tell me about it.
And the divorce rate. Yeah.
Well, that's an excellent point.
Divorce rate, birth
rate,
everything.
The divorce rate goes up because the birth rate goes up.
Oh, God. Too many. Can you?
Too many people in the house.
During COVID, I just couldn't. So I isolated by myself, which was awesome. Yeah, high fives all
so
around.
So, yeah, you
Oh, it was great.
Yeah.
It was great. But.
Oh, you're hanging out with your favorite person.
Me.
Yeah.
I don't even like myself that much.
Oh. Aww.
But when we're, I'm fine.
That's sad.
But.
Not a surprise, but.
Imagine a house of five or six people. And he just can't go anywhere for months.
I did hear
that would just be awful.
The birth rate went up for first-time parents.
Ah,
not that makes sense. Not necessarily across the board.
Fascinating.
So, yeah.
But reflecting on that time, you're right. I did like being there by myself. But after a while, it got wearing, didn't it, for you?
Yeah, there was a time where
like
I wanted to be out with people.
And you're like,
yeah.
What are we doing here, man?
But I would rather, I think I'd rather be forced to be alone
than forced to be
with the same person all the time that maybe I wanted a little break from.
There's a bunch of stories of people who wound up getting isolated together, roommates, you know, that lived in New York and stuff, who got married and stuff as a result of that, you know, because you were forced to be with each other.
Well, a lot of people in the city have been forced to stay in their homes.
Yes, they have.
And it's not everywhere. I mean, if you've driven around St. Louis City, a lot of the roads have been fine, even though we've had a storm that came through 3 weeks ago now. But there are still parts of the city that are having difficulty.
Right.
Again, the weather's going to warm up here. starting tomorrow. So we're going to be in the 40s, which means most of this stuff's going to go away. And those people who have not been able to leave their homes will have some relief. How do you look at what has happened here in the city? Is there something that could have been done better? Was this the ball dropped by city leadership? Was it a storm that was out of their control? What happened here?
Maybe a little of all of that, but I think really what it is a communications failure, and then ultimately a leadership and oversight problem. I don't know. I don't think it was an epic snowstorm of ridiculous proportion. It was substantial. It was much bigger than we'd anticipated.
And we did have two within a week.
Right, and I think people would have expected, hey, it may take us a week to dig out of this. Well, we're on the 20th day of this since this took place, and we're still dealing with it. I slipped yesterday in Tower Grove going into a great little coffee shop, not on their well-dealt-with sidewalks, but the roads. And so, you know, I don't know that the city has the resources that's necessary to really make its government work anymore. It clearly doesn't have the leadership and competence. And so how do you substitute for that when you don't have the assets necessary to meet the needs? You have to be present and communicating.
When you say they don't have the resources, what exactly do you mean?
Well, I mean, I don't know that they have a full complement of their trash trucks, which I think they're using to help plow the streets. I don't know that they have all the plows stuff necessary. They had cut the budget on the amount of salt that was needed as a result of just over time us not having some storms. So the resources weren't there. They continue to tell us they don't have the people power, Chris. You know, they can't recruit people to come to their job. And then I don't know if you guys saw this story on Channel 4, but on any given day in the city of St. Louis, 20% of the full-time employees are on Family and Medical Leave Act. No excuse,
whoa.
Family, yeah. And Medical Leave Act.
It's crazy.
Whoa.
I honestly don't know. Is that a lot? What's the typical percentage?
That's
I really
like
don't know.
600 people on any given day in the city of St. Louis that are on some type of family and medical leave.
I'm asking this earnestly. Do we know what a typical percentage is? Is it like 5?
I should send you the article, but yeah. It's well written, and it's just whatever it is. I mean, it's not based in reality of the world that the rest of us who aren't government employed are living. I think all of us have sympathy for people who have to be with their kids, et cetera, et cetera. We had this jails director gone for 6 weeks, used this policy implemented by the mayor. We had the personnel director of the city where we couldn't find them for 6 weeks, used this exact same thing. So if this is happening at the top levels of government, what's happening in the forestry division? What's happening in the roads department? And, this is a rudderless ship of chaos that we have in our city right now.
Hard to top that, isn't it? but what they've done with the family medical leave is, you know, most businesses have a fairly well-defined policy of what that means. You have a child, you get leave. You get maternity leave. You have a spouse that's going through chemotherapy and you're their caregiver, you get family and medical leave. In the city of St. Louis, you just claim it. I'm taking my family medical leave now. No excuse. and off they go for weeks at a time.
And I'll say this to Michael's point about we're on day 20. Olive Road, Olive Wright.
In front of the building.
Right in front of the building.
Where kids get dropped off to a school.
That's what is driving me insane. And you know what? In the evening, no one's parked there. There are no cars there. They had 1,000 opportunities to just plow that little strip in front of our building. And you may think, oh, that's self-serving. No, I park in a garage. I don't even use that entrance. None of us use that entrance. None of us park there. It doesn't bother me.
Right.
But I see today there were 6 cars parked in the middle of Olive because they can't park in the drop-off lane. And I see 2 moms with 2 little kids trying not to fall, walking across a sheet of ice that, by the way, is mountainous because of the snow that had been pushed to the side. How can anyone in the city either not know that that strip isn't plowed? Because guess what? City Hall is right there. I can look at City Hall.
Yeah.
Or 2, see that it's not plowed, know there's a school there for little kiddos and their parents, and not care enough to send one plow 20 days later to clean up that mess. Those poor kids and those parents have been walking across that mess, and it drives me nuts.
And it's not unique to this one instance, Amy. I mean, when I was in Tower Grove yesterday, where I had my little slip, the amount of trash that was piled up waiting for the trash to come. I mean, it's just...
There's a trash truck.
It feels like a third world country. It reminds me when you go to those fancy resorts down in Mexico, you know, and you're driving through stuff thinking, well, why are people living like this? This just should not happen. That's what's going on right now in our own city.
That's Michael Kelly. John Hancock is here as well with Amy Markscores and Chris Ranji. We've still got another segment to go with these two boys, and they could not be happier to be here. Say it, John. Say you're happy to be
here.
I'm
thrilled to be here.
I'm really, really happy at the moment.
It's Chris and Amy on KMOX. It's the Chris and Amy show on KMOX. Hancock and Kelly with us for a little bit longer. They're always with us on Friday mornings to start the weekend.
You say that begrudgingly.
No, I love it.
Really?
We literally talk about all the time how much
this
we love it.
This is a good launch for your weekend.
Yes.
The lunacy of Hancock and Kelly.
I would do this all day, every day.
Yeah.
If we had a choice, if Steve said, what do you want? And I would say, I want Hancock and Kelly.
Start the day with
every
Hancock.
Every day with us. The whole day. You never leave.
Well, you can't afford that.
It would get old.
You can't afford that. I'm not paying for it.
It would get old quick. But
I think what happens with us is we do our serious talk starting at like 7:30, you know, with Debbie and 8 o'clock. And so by the time we get to you guys, we're punch drunk. Like,
yeah,
we want to have fun.
Yeah.
You know?
So then you don't want to talk about important stuff.
Bring it up.
I mean, whatever.
But by the way,
it's why it's probably a little more energy.
We are streaming live on we stream live on Facebook on the KMOX page and YouTube and Twitter. And we have a message from Bob. Who said, well, the two of you have scarves on right now.
Yeah.
And he says, you look like two rabbis in the studio.
Thank you.
Because
it does look like we have two very wise men.
Yeah.
Yes.
We get Mo Zalok in here with his scarf and
Mo Zalok doesn't wear a scarf like a rabbi, though. Like,
no, he probably does a little twist and knots. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, he's more like John Hamm.
I love scarves. I should have put one on today.
I didn't even realize that people watched us when you guys have it on.
Bob's watching.
Yeah.
What's up, Bob? Dennis is watching.
Dennis
is watching on YouTube.
Dudes, huh?
And then I got my little.
You got your little scarf.
Yeah.
This week there were arguments made in Jefferson City about the St. Louis Police Department and whether or not the state should assume control of it. Before 2012, the state was in charge of the St. Louis City Police Department. We have since hired a new police chief. We have a new prosecutor. It appears that things are starting to move in the right direction. Governor Kehoe, who is the just elected and just taken office this month, he wants to have the state reassume control of the police department. So where do you two stand on it?
And another important group out there, the actual police officers, both of the unions are supportive of the state taking it over. I worked on the campaign to bring back control of the police department to the city of St. Louis. I think a city ought to have control of its assets. I think the mayor's spot on being down in Jefferson City. She's probably the worst messenger for it, but she's spot on to be going to Jefferson City saying, wait a minute, this is local control. We should be able to do this. And, you know, she went down there and touted, you know, look at my improvement on crime numbers as a reason as to why they're misguided. At the same time, I understand why people are calling for control of the state police department, or for the state to take over the police department, because there's that reminiscing that, boy, it didn't seem this chaotic and it didn't seem this disjointed when the state ran it. So while the mayor is making the right argument that she ought to have control of her own police department, what does she point to? Look, we handle things great in the city. It's a terrible time to be down making that argument in Jefferson City when you can't plow the snow. Oh, the crime numbers are going down in the Jefferson City. Look, at the end of the day, I don't feel it. And so while she may be making the right and appropriate argument, because of her actions, I ultimately believe the state will take control.
Yeah, and we would not be having this conversation if the local control of the St. Louis Police Department was performing swimmingly. We wouldn't have this conversation. We're having the conversation because there's a problem. And we've got unfilled spots. We've got a lack of officers on the street. We have slower response times. 9/11 call center you know, good luck. And it's not a state takeover. It allows the governor to appoint a majority of the board of police commissioners so that they have a majority there to set policy for the police department and supervise the police department. I think it's a good thing, and I think it's going to pass.
So even if, you know, we're looking at crime numbers, which are improving, we do have a relatively new police chief who seems to know what he's doing. We have a prosecutor, as I mentioned, who is prosecuting crimes. They are trying to fill officer positions. They're having a difficult time, just like a lot of cities around the country are having difficulty in getting people to want to become police officers. This is not a St. Louis specific problem. So knowing all of those things and knowing there is momentum, do we really want to disrupt that momentum?
Oh, it's going to happen regardless. The horse is out of the barn. I mean, this has been a conversation for 2 or 3 years. It's been held off for various reasons. The guards are down now. Mike Kehoe says he wants this. The legislature's working for it. I don't see how it's going to be stopped. I think it's ultimately bad, and it's not a conservative position for the state to be taking over the St. Louis City Police Department, but that's what you're going to get.
Look, the police officers have a mayor, and they feel like, and if you talk to them, if they'll talk to you privately, they feel like their leadership doesn't have their back. And you basically got the defund of the police crowd running the police department. And the officers know it, and they feel it, and they want the state to step in. And I think that speaks for itself.
Is that politics, though? Because by and large, police officers are very overwhelmingly, they vote Republican. Is it just because it is a Democratic mayor?
No. Because when Francis Slay was a Democratic mayor.
Well, things are different now than when Slay was the mayor. The political environment is much different.
But it was because, I mean, I don't want to be the basher of Democrats here on this, but it was because progressives came in and said the policeman is the problem with what we're doing here. And there's been an attack on the officers from a lot of the left. And then we started to see the implementation of a lot of these ridiculous policies that they've come through with, and I think that's where the pushback comes from.
Yeah.
John, can you lay it out, like, in layman's terms, how the state taking over the police department will improve the police department?
Well, it's not a panacea, certainly, but you're now going to have the governing body of the police department is going to be pro-police. And when the mayor's making all the appointments to that commission, you're going to get the mayor's viewpoint. Now you're going to have a decidedly pro-police board of police commissioners that are going to govern this thing. That will help. It's not going to solve every problem. It's not going to fill unfilled spots. But the police will have leadership that has their back.
Where do you stand? And we're going to talk to Bishop Davidson, representative out of District 130 in Missouri. That's Greene County. We're going to talk to him later in the show. In fact, at 12, he'll be joining us. About Missouri eliminating the state income tax, because Republicans want to do that. Governor Kehoe has said he wants to reduce the state income tax, eventually leading to an elimination of it altogether. There are different timelines, I guess, we can look at, but ultimately, is it a good thing for Missouri to do this?
If you could fund the essential services of government without taxing the incomes of your people, it makes the state a much more desirable location for people to do business and to move to. So as a goal, I think it's a laudable goal. And yeah, I'd love it if we didn't have an income tax. You've got to figure out a way to generate the revenue necessary to run the government. One of the hindrances we have in this state is the voters some years ago passed a constitutional amendment that you can't ever put a sales tax on real property. So in states that don't have an income tax, thinking about Florida and others, you pay a tax, sales tax, when you buy a home. And that's now unconstitutional in Missouri. So that revenue source is off the table. So I've not seen the proposals that would replace the loss of revenue from the state income tax, but they would have to have that component in place in order to eliminate it.
I think it's stupid and misguided. But in its most generous form, John's right, it will attract people to the state of Missouri.
Therefore, making it not stupid and misguided.
The problem is that it's been implemented in other states like Kansas, and in less than 2 years, it was rolled back. The other consequence of it is that you wind up having to raise taxes in other places. It's not like suddenly the money just is there and we're no longer taking it from income. No, they're going to put it on food. They're going to put it on things that you buy different places. And so it's paying Peter here or paying Paul there. I mean, you're going to pay one way or the other. There's no doubt about it that when you have to fill that gap with sales taxes, that hurts people at the bottom end the worst. And those are the ones who will feel it. Now, the people who drive these ideas are typically the people who have a lot of money. And it is attractive. It's look at Florida. It's been successful in attracting people that way.
Everywhere that's eliminated their income taxes.
And but then I'm fine with that, except you'd have to explain to me Kansas, because they eliminated the state income tax, and 2 years later it's back in. The Republicans lost everything, and they realized they couldn't do it.
I can explain it. Florida's nice to visit. Kansas is not.
Exactly. And so tell
Florida
me how
has
Missouri
oceans
is going to be different
it.
Than Kansas has experienced.
Well, Missouri is beautiful.
That's a question I have,
I'm not
too.
Saying it's not, but it isn't Florida. It's not
right.
Texas.
And have you been not- to Branson?
It's not Alaska, which doesn't have an income tax, but has oil. It's not Nevada, which has Las Vegas. So, and I'm just asking this, you know, genuinely, I don't necessarily put Missouri in a category with Nevada and Florida and Alaska or New Hampshire, which is small. And so is it that these states can not have an income tax because they have massive tourism industries that we don't have to that scale? Or is it a chicken or the egg where they grew because they didn't? Some of them, like Nevada, or I'm trying to think. Nevada, I think, eliminated its income tax in 1855, right? So effectively didn't really have one.
That's where I was going to go, is I think some of it may have happened before government became something we look to do so much of, mm-hmm. and they found other ways to pay for it, and it's an accepted practice. There's no doubt about it. We're going to have to raise the sales tax in Missouri. And that's not going to help working people. It's surely not going to help poor people if that's how we're going to pay for government rather than paying via income tax.
Yeah, well, I favor the policy of getting rid of taxes.
Well, who doesn't?
Yeah. I mean, nobody wants to pay
too,
taxes.
But I would like them to make sure that when it snows, I can get over to Kansas City within a week because they're going to plow it, or that we have a road that does it.
We're going to plow the road.
I love the idea behind Republicans, the tax cuts, tax cuts, tax cuts, and they put us in a defense of that we're not for tax cuts. No, I'm for tax cuts. I just was also like the basic government services. I also would like a government that does provide us with roads and picks up the trash on the highways and does the things that you have to pay for.
So would it be fair to say, I get that we're coming together on that, right? Nobody wants taxes, but I think Republicans are saying we can make government run more efficiently. They don't need all this money, and progressives are saying we do need this money.
I don't know. I mean, I don't understand how the Republicans, you know, they just had to raise taxes, by the way, so that they can do all the investment on the roads in Missouri. And part of that's because we don't have enough money coming in to pay for the roads. Now we're going to do away with the taxes? Well we're still going to have more money that's going to need to come for roads. But it trickles down to everything, John. I mean, at the end of the day, the money that goes into government is one of the lifelines of what makes the economy work. If we do away with it, we make cuts. We're all for that. But we're not going to have the same infrastructure and services.
Nobody's saying that you're going to eliminate the income tax and do nothing else. Nobody's proposing that.
Well, how come that second part never comes out? I never heard D.O. say how he's going
to
make it
up. And the reason we had the gas tax is because we had the lowest gas tax in the country, and we didn't have enough money to fund the roads. So, you know, look. Tax revenue is essential for government to work.
Right.
But taxing income is particularly
But how convenient
difficult.
To be able to run for an election and say, I'm going to do away with the state income tax, when the way that you're going to do that is you're going to raise taxes. He's going to have to raise taxes.
Of course you're going to have to raise
taxes. But they don't ever get to that part.
Well,
we don't ever have the conversation.
What they have done to date is they have, as revenues of the state have increased, they have reduced the state income tax a commensurate amount so that the revenues are coming in and they're easing the tax burden on people because the economy is growing. And if they can continue, it'll take a long time to get there if they keep doing it that way. But that's the way that we've done it to this point in Missouri.
Is it snooker time?
Yes.
Did you see this? I thought it was, did you see this?
Well, yeah, it will be.
Oh. For us.
Yeah, and you'll be listening. Guys. You'll be listening to it on the way to the snooker hall.
Oh, every last sentence that comes out of your mouth.
Hancock and Kelly's scars look fabulous. They look like a couple of GQ models.
I think you guys look great.
Oh,
wouldn't go that far.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
We love you both.
Happy weekend, guys.
Yeah.
Have a great weekend, two of you. John Hancock, Michael Kelly, and yes, they are correct. Did you see this? Is next on KMOX.
Now, did you see this? With Chris and Amy.
All right, Amy, Valentine's Day is coming up. And there are a couple of zoos around the country apparently that do this after looking into it a little bit more. But the Brookfield Zoo, which is in Chicago, is offering you the opportunity to name a cockroach after an ex. Do you have an ex you don't care for? Well, if you do, you can, for $15... You can name one of the Madagascar hissing cockroaches that lives in the Hamel Family Play Zoo. You can name them.
What's a play zoo?
I guess it's where the kids go.
Okay.
So the name a cockroach package, again, $15. Yep. And the first name of the hissing cockroach will appear on the cockroach naming board posted outside the Hamel Family Play Zoo.
If I gave you $30, would you name a cockroach after that girl and then the girl's sister?
Why would I name it after the sister didn't do anything wrong?
Yeah, well, you did something wrong because she reached out to you.
I didn't do anything.
She reached out to you by following you on Instagram, which is a total, hey, I am open to you reaching out to me officially, and you didn't respond, but I just think you should name the cockroaches after the sisters.
The second sister didn't do anything wrong.
Doesn't matter.
She was just, you know, checking in.
So, if I gave you $15, would you name a cockroach after the original sister?
I don't, you know, I'm not petty. I don't think I need to be petty. There's no reason for that. Uh-huh. But I do have until 5 p.m. on February 5th to name a cockroach after somebody that is an ex that I don't like. Honestly,
what if we took a Twitter poll? Should Ronge name a cockroach after the girl that handed him off to her sister?
Can I just tell you?
What?
And this is 100% true.
Yeah.
I really do not dislike any of my exes.
That's awesome.
I get along with all of them.
That's awesome. But
it's probably a problem for the new ones.
Do you consider?
I get along perfectly well with all of my ex-girlfriends.
Do you consider the original sister an ex or no?
No, I knew her for 2 weeks.
So I think we should take a Twitter poll. Should Ronge name a cockroach after the original sister who lied to him, ditched him, went to the same bar with a different
on
man
New Year's
on
Eve.
New Year's Eve, and then the next day tried to set him up with her sister?
Tyler, did you hear about this? Oh, you did? Okay.
I think we should make that our Twitter poll today.
All right, we'll do that.
And if you know, you know.
I'm not, whatever you tell me, I'm not going to do it. I am not going to name it after her.
Come on. The people will vote.
Look, she doesn't like me. Clearly, she's having a mental crisis.
You probably gave it to her.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's what happened. In 2 weeks' time,
That's
I gave
bad
somebody.
You are. Oh, whatever.